Talking today with Bryce Anderson, DTN. Bryce, you are talking here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasters meeting about El Nino. You indicated it's going to be the big driver this winter, you think?
I certainly do, Ron. With El Nino, the relationship between what we have going on with a strong event and then the sustained subtropical jet across the southern plains is pretty well identified. And I do think that that's going to keep things on the chilly side, relatively speaking, on temperatures for Oklahoma and the remainder of the southern plains. But also it promises to be a moisture producer. We need to get it going. It's been a little bit of a slow starter with these weather systems kind of moving too quickly to bring a whole lot of precip into the Southern Plains region. But I think that as we go through, we're going to have more chances for that to happen.
You know, some of our folks were maybe a little skeptical about some of that because after all the moisture we had back in that May, June, early July period, turned off very dry. And in fact, the flash drought that caught several states.
That is certainly true. There's been, you know, some improvement, but it's mainly been, you know, in the eastern half of Texas, and we're going to see more of that over the next 5 to 7 days. What we need to have happen is for storm systems that come in out of the Pacific to slow down just a little bit more, or at least to be more frequent, particularly out of the Baja area. And I think that as we go through the rest of November and then into December, that we are going to see that.
You were also talking about this year's the Corn Belt and the production we've had for soybeans and corn. Really a pretty good crop overall, and it seems like maybe better than what we were hoping for at the beginning of the summer.
Much better than people had thought, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that in the eastern Corn Belt, they were able to recover quite well from the terribly wet conditions they had during planting. The production was given a real boost by the fact that we just simply didn't have any freeze, all the way through the end of the season. And so, you know, what happened was that even if, say, corn didn't get planted until late May into June and soybeans didn't get planted until July, there was the opportunity for those crops to pretty much go all the way through their typical growing season. And that's where that bump really showed up. And then, of course, you know, farther northwest, there just wasn't any issue at all in Iowa, Minnesota, and the Dakotas and Nebraska.
I guess proven there with a record corn crop yield in Iowa this year.
Definitely, and that's the reason for that. There was just all of this mild opportunity for that grain to fill clear to its capacity.
Right. Let's talk about winter and into the spring. You were saying that El Nino is going to rule the roost here December into the early part of 2016. What will that look like, you think, then?
I think what we're going to see is pattern bring us a fairly chilly and wet winter over the southern plains and then into the Delta and the Gulf Coast. You get farther north, the northern plains, the Dakotas, and then eastward into Minnesota, Illinois, and on east across Indiana and Ohio. I think they're going to be fairly warm and dry. And that's going to be, I think, pretty good for getting field work going next spring. But we get into the late spring into summer, I think there's going to be some questions on soil moisture in those parts of the Corn Belt.
And you said that there's always that possibility that El Nino could be followed very quickly by La Nina.
Yes, indeed. The water temperatures, as funny as it is in the Pacific, can switch rather rapidly from very warm to cool. And we have seen that happen in the past, and those occurrences have gone along with some hits to our production, particularly in corn and soybeans. We saw that in 1987-88. We also saw it in 2009 into 2010.
How does the El Nino patterns, you've studied them back several decades, I know, how are they being impacted by what people keep talking about when it comes to climate change?
It's hard to put a real tag on that because we know that El Nino and La Nina are part of the ocean cycles. You know, there are some others also. And to identify Climate change is putting a stamp on El Nino. Right now, that's very hard to identify, and so the ocean cycles still pretty much have lives of their own, so to speak.
Right. Well, last question, Bryce. As far as how you know, obviously we've heard some discussion that when you have a strong El Nino, that can have impact over into the Atlantic, and the hurricane season and the storms that are resulting that maybe come into the United States from the Atlantic. Is there much credence to that?
Well, there certainly is. El Nino, with the sustained subtropical jet stream presence, tends to hinder the development of those tropical storms. La Nina is much more favorable for that because a La Nina jet stream track is a lot quieter in the Atlantic equator, and so it allows those storms to build with a little bit more favorable type of scenario.
So I guess what, if we got La Nina, that could mean more a busier hurricane season in 2016.
It certainly could, and it's one thing that that I don't think the Tropical Prediction Center is too terribly concerned about right now. Mm-hmm. But when we get into late February, March, and on into April, as things possibly switch in that Pacific character, there's going to be more attention paid to that potential.
And that's when you're going to be watching closest, that February, March period?
Yes, definitely, because that is when things can go from one to the other. In 1988, for example, the ocean went from El Nino in 87 to a strong La Nina in late May into June in 1988. And it only took, maybe 6 or 7 weeks to do. It was a remarkable switch.